Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned into Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen territories of the Katsi, Kwikwetlem, and Stola First Nations. And here on Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship of the lands and the waters. My name is Leslie, and today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is going to be a little bit different. So I'm going to be talking about the topic of not leaning into instant gratification. I'm going to be talking about trying some things, failing, and the value of practice, the value of perseverance and persistence, and consistency. And while I do that, I'm actually going to be crocheting because I'm not very good at it, but I'm doing so on air today to basically make a point about what I'll be talking about. So stick around for the rest of the program for that. I haven't honestly been listening to a lot of music lately, but this is some of the music that some musicians that I follow have been performing recently, I guess, or releasing as new stuff into their discography. So get into it. The first track today is Fan Club Wallet with Know You Anymore. Enjoy.
Supposed got married in Memphis. Cause you know I love Elvis. We were broken romantic, yes we were. Cut off t-shirt and tuxedo pants. Honky tonk for a slow dance. You were everything I didn't know I needed. We're both animals, no one could tame. You were on the run, so you took my last name.
Latest from Gouldy Boutillier off of her record Gouldy Boutillier Presents Gouldy Montana. That's Neon Nuptials. Hope you enjoyed that one here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Before that, you heard American Chinese Bear with Love You. A fun track, a little bit of indie for this first part of the playlist this hour. I'm gonna go into some very non-indie stuff later on, but yeah, I'm Leslie. I'm crocheting a little project right now on Typically Tuesdays, and this is actually, what do I want to call this? I guess this is a crocheted keychain of a watermelon motif created by French textile artist, I guess, Chloe Glynn. The pattern is for free on her website, and I can link to that in the show notes of this episode later on this week when it gets posted onto cjsf.ca. But one of the reasons why I wanted to, the reason why I wanted to make this project is because, you know, we gotta continue to show up for Palestine and to show up for the people of Gaza, who finally are recognized by the UN as being genocided just a few weeks ago, even though this was obviously something that a lot of people had already recognized was happening. The systemic, oh my goodness, the systemic exploitation and oppression of, like, aid not being able to enter into Gaza, and the ways that the Israeli government have been purposely targeting schools and refugee camps and hospitals with their airstrikes over the course of almost 2 full years now has been absolutely horrendous to be watching. And if you are a person who is engaged with what's happening around the world, you know this as well. Wanted to make this crochet project so that I could have something to show my unwavering support for the liberation of Palestine, and to show that I, as many people do, it is no longer an unpopular opinion, would like the genocide of Gaza to cease. And I actually already made one of these watermelon keychains earlier this week, or last week, I guess. And it turned out okay, but I had to try and try and try and try again with that little item, because I'm not very good at crocheting. My little background would be, I guess, that the women in my family have been quite good at crocheting and knitting and can, like, make things right out of their brain, but that skill was not handed down to me. And more importantly, I didn't really have the patience to learn how to do it when I was younger. It's only in the past couple of years that I've begun to pick up crocheting and knitting out of mostly vanity, because I want to make my own clothes. But it has been an uphill battle, definitely, because as it turns out, I'm not good at everything new, and most people are not that way either. One of the things that I have really treasured in learning how to crochet and learning how to knit is knowing that I'm really bad at it, and knowing that I am a total, I would say I'm like a beginner in many ways. I don't really have the hand skills to do it. I understand the way that it works. My brain seems to understand that. And because I grew up with people who make clothes, I understand how clothes are made, what patterns are needed, what shapes are needed and stuff. But the act of putting things together and counting, always having to count, has oftentimes been difficult. Tension as well, pulling the tension on the thread has also been a little bit of a challenge, because I'm not always consistent with it, and that is something that I'm trying to get better at. So earlier last week, when I had made my first watermelon crochet keychain, I had to start maybe the first step several times, maybe 3 or 4 times, because I was losing count, I wasn't really paying attention, I was getting confused about how to do the stitches. And finally, when it was done, I found that the tension, you could see in the product how inconsistent my tension was. And so I thought, why don't I just make another one so that I can be able to see and remember and learn from my mistakes with making the first one. And also I can have an additional keychain to hang on my other bag. And I think part of the fun, part of the fun of learning these new skills is the frustrating part. It's the part where you have to fail and try again and learn how to do it better. This is an opinion that I've held for quite a while, I guess. And if you've been a longtime listener of Typically Tuesdays, you probably know where I'm trying to get at here. But imperfectionism in making stuff, I think is really important. Because it teaches us how to do things better. And even more important than that, it gives a particularly human quality to what we make. It's not even just the way that the art piece or the keychain or the, I don't know, sweater that you're making turns out. Rather, the act of trying and knowing that something may not be perfect, but you gave it your all, is, I think, a really important human experience. And when I look around me and see the proliferation of, the proliferation of AI-generated anything, and the way that people are so happy to lean into it, it makes me really sad. Because, you know, where is that human spirit, that gumption to try and fail? A lot of, I think, being a person is about doing something, sucking at it, and then trying again. That's the only way that we get better at doing things. And when we don't have, I think, the patience or the... I think if we don't have the sensibility to want to be imperfect, or not to want to be imperfect, but when we don't have the sensibility to try something and then be kind of bad at it, if we rely on convenience, if we continue to rely on urgency and this lack of ability to, or I guess try so hard to avoid, how many is this? That's two? Hold on. You see, now this is me doing something related to the crochet. I'm just counting things and counting stitches. If we refuse to accept the fact that some things take time, some things take practice. Actually, a lot of things take time. A lot of things take practice. I think we risk kind of disconnecting from ourselves, from each other, from what we're doing in our life. You know, it's a very alienating thing. I feel like people subconsciously, they don't realize that they're doing. I think also when it comes to making something, or let me say this, not making something, but I think when it comes to trying and persisting in spite of potential failure, in spite of imperfectionism. When we try to do something, we allow for a skill or for a community or for an organization or a movement to have more of a chance of having longevity, I think. For most people in this world, very few things in life are super easy, right? And I feel very much that part of the essence of doing something, feeling a sense of purpose in doing it, has to do with the struggle. It has to do with that, because you have to learn how to work within limits. You have to learn how to become creative and resourceful. You have to learn how to obtain, well, I guess I would say you have to learn how to gain and practice skills and be consistent with doing so. Okay. Let's see. I'm gonna count my stitches and see if I have the right number of stitches. And if I don't, I'll just have to take some of this apart and redo it again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Okay. This is the last one, I think. And I understand that for some people, the needing to wait it out when learning a new skill, having to wait it out and practicing how to get better at doing the thing, I understand for some people that that is the worst part of doing anything. I know for a lot of folks, like, they feel the need to be perfect and great at doing a new thing the very first time they do it. Because we're a culture that really values greatness and victory. We're not a culture that, like, appreciates failure. We're not a culture that, despite the way that it wants to tell people that it values meritocracy and diligence and hard work, we're not a culture that does that. We're like, you got to be a genius when you first start doing things. And being a genius gives you status and power in this world, right? And for me, it doesn't come to a surprise at all that tech bros and their followers are so hung up on things like generative AI that allow you to, you know, get the answer to something right away, or allow you to get an image or a film or a piece of writing right away as soon as you enter it into the machine. Obviously for the CEOs, it's about money, right? But for the followers, it's about feeling adjacent to that, I think. Feeling adjacent to greatness. feeling adjacent to having the power to create something that they manifested with the snap of a finger or with the typing of the keyboard. A few words into some kind of program. You know, to those people, and to you, listener, I really want to say there's an incredible sense of accomplishment in being quite bad at something, like learning a new skill, sucking at it, practicing it in spite, and then seeing your progress. I'm just looking at the stitches that I've made so far on my keychain, and compared to the first one that I made, compared to the first attempt that I made in making this, you know, I'm actually, this is nothing fancy, and it's actually probably very low skill level in terms of like crochet, but I'm actually quite proud of myself at what I've made. Because if you remember, as I mentioned earlier, the stitches on my first watermelon keychain appeared kind of inconsistent. And there were stitches that looked a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, a little bit tighter, a little bit looser and stuff. But this time, in the second attempt, it is looking a lot more consistent. And as a result, it's not perfect, but as a result, it is looking a lot prettier than my first keychain. It's something that I'm actually very excited about. And I wish more people would feel like they can try and chase this feeling. You know, though our society rewards greatness at the drop of a hat, though it rewards seeming perfectionism, though it rewards urgency, I don't know that is the thesis of being a human. What truly makes life interesting is the fact that we can struggle sometimes. I'm not talking necessarily politically struggle, but, you know, we can suck at doing something or be going through a time, but then we come out of it. And we come out of it stronger and greater and smarter, more resourceful. It's a pretty cool thing. I think, unfortunately, something that people no longer value as much. And obviously, of course, who would want to value sucking and being bad at something and struggling? Why would that even sound fun? That obviously doesn't. But what is that old adage? You know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. You know, when you look back on your journey and you see, oh, that's the place where I started from and I got all the way here. You know, that's a pretty cool and satisfying feeling. And, you know, I would say even for some people, it gives them a sense of purpose. I'm going to play more music now. Here is the latest from Teke Teke. This is Memu. Enjoy.
That's the second half. All right. And this is the first one.
Wow, we're running right now.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. When you hear this drilling and cat-like squeal, look for a delicate woodpecker, a sapsucker. Depending on where you live, you're most likely to see one of three species. The yellow-bellied lives in the east, red-naped in the Rockies, and red-breasted on the Pacific coast. Each of them quietly drills small holes in the bark of favored trees, then returns again and again to eat the sap that flows out. Although a sapsucker sucks the tree's blood, so to speak, the drilling usually doesn't damage an otherwise healthy tree. The sapsucker also takes the small insects attracted to the seeping sap. And hummingbirds, kinglets, and warblers also come to the sap wells to feed. In this way, sapsuckers benefit other birds. You can spot sapsucker trees by the horizontal rows of holes scattered up and down the trunk. These trees freeze in winter, so most sapsuckers are highly migratory. When spring comes, sapsuckers become noisier, drumming like other woodpeckers, but in syncopated rhythms. They seek out dead trees in mature forests in which to excavate their nest holes, and sipping sap gives way to foraging for insects. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
is bird note. Corvids, like crows and jays, are known for scatter hoarding, which sometimes turns into inadvertent gardening, says forest and behavioral ecologist Mario Pesendorfer.
Corvids will take seeds and hide them all over the area, and often they hide more than they need over the winter, and then many stay in the ground and have a chance to turn into small plants.
That's what happened on Santa Cruz Island in Southern California. It's part of Channel Islands National Park, where native shrub oak habitats were largely decimated by grazing livestock. After these animals were removed in the 80s and 90s, Santa Cruz Island regained vegetation faster than its neighbors, thanks to corvids. In a 2017 study, Mario and his colleagues found that the island scrub jays, a species endemic to Santa Cruz, were instrumental to the abundant new growth.
We could show that the jays that are flying around caching the acorns, they played the main role in the recovery of oak habitat on these islands.
Since corvid species are so widespread and naturally inclined to disperse seeds, Mario says native birds could help restoration ecologists regrow forests beyond the Channel Islands, too.
Most people know jays for their intelligence, and I now have the joy of bringing the ecological role of jays closer to people.
Learn more about restoration ecology in the latest season of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app. For Bird Note, I'm Jazzy Johnson.
Come on.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesday. As you just heard, we just met, but let's move in together by Tima Likes Music and by Mads. What a banger. What a good song. A huge shift in tone. Before that, you heard another shift in tone, Not Equal Me with Mobu no Dereda, here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie, and I have been talking about the art and joy of practicing and persisting. Because, you know, if you want to get good at something, the thought used to be, you know, you practice, right? A lot of the times today, I think the thought is not necessarily that. I think there's a lot of discomfort that a lot of people feel in knowing that they're not good at something. And it is totally understandable because we currently live in a society that is more and more, I would say, more and more less. That doesn't make sense. I would say we're living in a society right now. We're living in a society. We right now are afflicted by a world that no longer values empathy and no longer values the human experience of trying and being bad at something but getting better at it. Rather, right now, I think our society is really into the idea of being great at something the first try. And I guess partly because there is status and potential power associated with that, but also we want instant gratification. I think we're right now less patient than we used to be. Right now, we are less comfortable or less at ease with knowing that discomfort is a human experience. We don't like that. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this today, and it's mostly in the context of like doing creative stuff, but obviously I think a lot of things, and if you've been a longtime listener of Typically Tuesdays, you know this, a lot of things in the world are actually quite political. They're connected to political things. I think it's really important to return to an attitude towards discomfort and failure, to see that those things have value in our lives because, one, they're human experiences, but also because we gain something from them. From discomfort, we gain resilience. From failure, we gain knowledge and skill. And before we end off the show today, the reason why I think that returning to these values and understanding how important they are in our lives can be so important because when you look at progressive politics, particularly like with the feminist movements, with anti-racist movements, and so on and so forth, you don't get anywhere the first try, right? You don't... If you are of the people and you are like everyone else, chances are that the very few people who have a lot of power over you, they are going to do everything in their power and resources to squash you. You can't give up. That is not an option. You can slow down. You can take some time to recuperate and find reprieve. But then you return to what you were doing. You continue to persist. I think a lot of people don't realize how important that is. And it can be really mind-boggling because on one hand, you know, if you think about, for example, the fact that it's only now that the UN has recognized that the genocide in Gaza is a genocide, we couldn't have possibly gotten there right on like October 14th, 2023. That would have been impossible. There were so many things that were against the odds of the movement towards a free Palestine, right? Even now, when the Canadian government officially recognizes Palestine as a state, it took decades for that to happen. But in those decades, that all of that is work. All of that is perseverance. All of that is trying, finding things that are not working out, but doing it anyways. Continuing, persevering, being consistent about it. I heard recently that there were people who were very surprised that student protesters in Nepal were able to like overthrow their corrupt government. A lot of people in the West seem to have this notion that it happened in the course of like just a few days. But I forgot who it was exactly who had talked about this online, but nothing like that happens in just a moment. It takes years. It takes dedication. It takes sacrifice. It's about the struggle. And I don't know. I guess like personally, I just feel like it can feel a little bit frustrating right now. Being a person who kind of recognizes that these types of things and the general experience of being a human being, you know, it's for the long haul, right? You don't boycott, you know, Disney once. You don't boycott Disney corporations once, Disney World once, and then yay, we have like, you know, the genocide in Gaza has stopped, and yay, apartheid in Palestine has stopped, right? We're in it for the long haul. And I find myself often flip-flopping on this because I know it can be quite difficult for people to commit to a boycott because of convenience, because of excess of resources. But I think all of that, you know, it falls into this wider, more complicated conversation about being consistent and stubborn and recognizing that there are some sacrifices that in our lives that need to be made in order for the world to become a better place. Sometimes one of those things, in the context of today's episode, it means convenience. It means letting go of a sense of urgency and recognizing that you have to move slow, recognizing that this is a long-term thing. It's not realistic and sustainable to want instant gratification all the time. You can't do that when you want to become good at something. You can't do that when you want to change your life. And you can't do that when you want to live in a world that will become a better place. We have to struggle. We have to lean into discomfort. And we have to constantly, constantly show up. So with my keychain, I have finished the red part, so kind of like the watermelon flesh of it. And now I'm going to move on to the white rind part. And honestly, it might sound like it's taking a long time because this project apparently is only supposed to be like a 10-minute project according to the pattern maker. But I'm still learning. I'm bad at crocheting, but one day I will be good at it, organically. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye!